book.
It does. It sure does.
So, I'm sorry I missed the dinner though tonight.
Oh, no worries. It actually turned out really nice.
I hate I missed, because I tell you what, Miss Holly, no, she cook a good...
Did she try her pie?
Well, she gave me some the first time I met her. Yeah. Oh, my, it was delicious. Yes, she is. It was delicious.
You just weren't able to make it?
I had to go to take my daughter. She moved, and I had to drive the rental to Atlanta.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I couldn't make it either. I was planning to be there.
Yeah, I hate I missed.
Well, she cooked a really good dinner. She had roasted chicken, potato salad, tomatoes.
Oh,
it was pretty good.
Wish I had a fresh tomato right now. Just when we was growing up, you know, like out in the field, we'd just go get them off the thing, have some salt and pepper, and just eat them right off the thing.
I got the vein. One from Mr. Jackson just gave us some.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know Mr. Jackson. I should know.
Yeah, he's up in Mount Pleasant.
Jackson in Mount Pleasant? I really should know him. What kind of, is he the one that got the hydroponics? No, not him.
He's retired now, but he had a hog farm.
Mr. Jackson. He used to have a bunch of...
A whole family.
He used to have a bunch of cows, and he was one of the biggest cow farm. Up there in Mount Pleasant.
Yeah.
Go up there and you go left and back up in back up in there. They used to have a whole lot of land. I imagine they still got it.
Yeah, more family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
5 acres or so. And that was just recently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe he used to also work at the state hospital.
Yeah, he did. He said he worked up there. So, I mean, he worked at Winn-Dixie. And but he's talking about how hard it was to get his kids or anybody to farm.
I had all girls.
Right.
And I got some grandboys,
yeah.
But yeah. The oldest one's just 6 years old, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, you never know.
Yeah.
But he's got one grandson that is really interested in it.
Yeah.
He was there.
That was nice.
He really likes it a lot. Well, he's only 12.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
good. He's doing 4-H and all that.
Good.
All right, so let's see. I'm about ready if you guys are ready. Okay, so I'm Amanda Hardiman. Today is June 20th, 2018. Adam Watson is joining me, and we work for the State Library and the Florida Folklife Program. And we're here at your farm, 635, what's the name of the road?
Carolina Road.
Carolina Road in Quincy. And can you start out by telling me your name and date of birth?
My name is Michael Kendall Brown. I was born June 5th, 1968.
All right.
Middle name Kendall, because my auntie said I was born one time when Robert F. Kennedy got killed, assassinated, and that's how I got the middle name Kendall, part of the Kennedy name.
I like that.
That's
right. How do you spell it?
Kendell. Okay. She gave me part of the Kennedy.
And you had a birthday not too long ago. Mine's June 11th.
Okay.
Good month.
Yeah, good month. Gemini.
Yeah, we are. All right. So tell me about growing up here.
Raised here in the big city of Quincy all my life. Always worked all my life. Started driving the tractor when I was about 4 years old in the tobacco field. And that's the first thing I learned how to drive was the tractor. I always was the tractor driver in the fields. And I started, like I said, driving when I was four. I was hardly big enough. I wasn't even big enough to reach the clutch. So you sit on the seat, and when you get ready to stop, I used to have to just jump down on the clutch. I was so little, but that's how I started out, driving the tractor.
And was that on your own farm, your family's?
Yes, we always grew tobacco. We never grew shade tobacco, but we always grew sun tobacco. Even back to my great-granddaddy, Joe Brown, and even his father, which is Silas Brown. But we always, for years and years, grew tobacco from the late 1800s, and I was the last one to grow tobacco in this county, and I stopped in 2006. I think I was the last one on record in this county to grow tobacco, yes, in 2006.
And then was that on, what was your family's land? Is it the same property?
We have property over in the Friendship area, like 75 acres. My dad actually bought this property here like in 1978. But we have property by Quincy Farms, which is the mushroom factory. We also have a whole bunch of property over off of Sally Brown Road, which is right down over hundreds of acres. My cousin sold like 90 some acres, but we still have over 100 and some acres right over on Sally Brown Road.
What was your parents' names?
My father was Charles E. Brown. My mother is Geraldine Robertson Brown. My grandfather was Randolph Brown. His father was Joe Brown.
And they all did tobacco?
Yes, they all did tobacco.
All son tobacco?
All son tobacco. Of course, they started out working in shade tobacco. But at that time, from what I told, you know, a lot of the people worked in shade tobacco. Of course, they worked in it. But from what I told, my family always had their own, so we always grew son tobacco. And my granddad, great-granddad had so much. Then my granddad grew it. And my daddy probably grew the most out of all my family grew it, but my dad probably grew the most out of all the family. He even got up to almost one time right at 50 acres.
So when did you first become interested in farming? Did you do this always?
We always had to work. When my dad grew up, I remember being a little boy, something that kind of stuck with me, when you're young, it's the summertime, all the boys either can just sleep late or they play baseball, and I always had to come home for school. We always had chores. My dad worked at the state hospital and he farmed, and he would leave notes for us for things to do. So I didn't like it at the time as a little boy. I thought it was punishment, but he told us, he said, when those other boys get big, all they're going to know how to do is bounce a basketball or throw a football. And he said their chances of making pro would be very slim if any of them make it. But he said, I'm going to teach you how to work. And he said, when you go on a man job, you'll be able to hold it. And it's three of us, my brothers, and I mean, I'm the only one who kind of took the tradition, but he taught us all the work ethic. When we go on a man job, we hold a job, and he taught us that. So I'm the baby, so I always was kind of always around my daddy. So, my oldest brother was a federal correction officer in Tallahassee. He can retire soon. My middle brother, which is Charles Brown Jr., we all had the farm, but, they kind of left. My brother Charles went to the military, and he come back, and he's been at Coastal Lumber Company for over 20 years. He's a superintendent out there, but they help me out when they get a chance. But, they have regular jobs, but I kind of took it on as a full-time, My dad, we always had this thing, like, I supposed to do better than my dad, but, my daddy did do better than my granddad, and my granddaddy did do better than his dad, but my dad, mostly this you see around here is the hard work of my dad, so be kind of hard to top, but I'm half smart.
Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit about tobacco in this area, the history of it, how it's changed over time?
Yes, in the 70s, the history of Gaston County, if you know the history, it was a place where even back then they used to let school out because, tobacco, it was the industry. Even all the way in Gaston County over in Havana, I always knew a family called the Scrange. They grew tobacco. Here in this county, there used to be a gentleman by the name of Eugene Thomas. There was a time when everybody grew tobacco. But then as the years went to start fading out, it was kind of like you had to have an allotment. So most of the big tobacco producers, it was like you could sell your allotment. So my daddy, over the years, he accumulated. He just, in other words, if you used to farm and you said, well, I ain't growing tobacco no more. I could rent your pounds of tobacco for just say if you had 10,000 pounds, what you would do is rent me your tobacco for, just say, 75 cents a pound or a dollar a pound. And so most people had kind of stopped growing it. The shade tobacco was the big industry. Shade Tobacco left here, I want to say, in like 1974, 75. And after that, maybe my daddy, maybe four other farmers in the county, the only ones kind of kept growing it for the, all the way up until the, you know, the in the 2000s. But my daddy never missed a crop of growing tobacco. I think he told me he had his first crop of tobacco when he was in 1961. And I think he finished high school in like, I think my dad finished high school in like 62. So he never missed a crop from that time all the way to like 2003. I think he grew his last crop. And then I started growing it. But I always worked in tobacco every summer from a boy to 25, 30 years old. Even when I took on a job, I always would work a job and come help my dad in the tobacco. When I got off, I'd work at night, stay out here with him to 2 or 3 o'clock, get me some sleep, be back on my regular job that night at 7 o'clock.
I'm going to pause a minute and fix something.
Okay.
Can we hide this a little bit? The cords.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, like pull that around to the back.
Okay.
Maybe.
Okay.
So what changed? What happened to where? Talk a little bit about why it's dropped off, tobacco.
Okay. After like in the 2000s, there's not many people growing tobacco here in this part of Florida, Georgia, where it happened all across the United States. Most of the states that grew tobacco, Georgia, Florida, Alabama, Virginia. Of course, North Carolina, South Carolina, famous for tobacco. Of course, Tobacco Road with the university. The government had what you call a tobacco buyout program. So it was sort of like I was explaining to you about, you had to have an allotment. So it come to where you didn't have to have an allotment anymore. So even right now, if you wanted to grow some tobacco, you could just grow it. You just get you a contract. Used to be a time when you grew peanuts, you used to have a allotment to grow peanuts. And then it got to where anybody could grow peanuts. So, and then to help them change the dynamic of society. Used to be a time in 1980s, 1990s, when we get out of school, our phone ringing all the time. Mr. Brown, can I work? Can I get a job? That's how actually most of the families where we lived in Friendship worked for my dad and my granddad. That's how you got your school clothes. You know, back then, you know, it was nothing. It was like, that's what you did. Everybody wanted a job. You know, the phone never stopped ringing all summer about wanting a job to work in tobacco. I mean, we had families that worked for us for years and years. So as time went by, the dynamics changed, children changed. Now, that's actually the reason why I quit growing it. In 2006, I lost a whole crop of tobacco. Tobacco was probably 6 feet tall, leaves on it that long. It was beautiful. I literally just couldn't get the help. So now you either got to go automate it. I mean, they make machines now where I could just take that machine and go out there and crop the tobacco myself. But, you know, you have to, like in the back of here, you see those are tobacco bombs. And now, but they got it now that you can just take one person, go out there and do it, and just back it right in that barn, and you're done. Well, it took a crew that, you know, used to have a crew of 16 people sometime 20. So over the time period, it just got real hard to get help. Over the years, though, it haven't always been like that. We used to have families that were Hispanic. Every summer they would come here and we'd give them a contract and they prime the tobacco for us, put it in the barn, take it out. And it's, you know, times got modern. A lot of the Hispanics went to work into the factories, you know, getting regular, you know, jobs, and just nobody just kind of liked wanted to do the, and it's hard work working in tobacco. It's hot, you know, this time of year, especially in July, you know, it's hot, you know, it's hard work, you know, it's so many assets to it. You start off with the sand, what they call sand leaves, sand lug, but it get easier as you come up the stalk because you don't have to bend down. You know, you can stand up, and it got easier like around it. You'll finish it like in September. It start cooling down then. It was easy then, but you know, when you first start out, it'd be just real hot and just got the people didn't just couldn't find help no more. So that's pretty much, that's the reason why I just quit growing it. Just couldn't get the help. Just now, it's because of where I live at. Now, if I was living up on the edge of Georgia, you know, there's more migrant help. And I probably could get help, but just here where I live, because it's just not a lot here in the area, I just couldn't get the help.
Where would you, so after you harvest, what do you do with it?
After we harvest tobacco, for years and years, we used to take it and sell it up in Moultrie, Georgia, to Peacock warehouses from the 1960s all the way up until like the 2000s. But then Mr. Peacock died. He had the business with his sons, but it changed. We used to put tobacco in sheets. It went to like cardboard boxes where you just pack it all into this big bale like you see at the stores, and we'll just put it in that. So we started selling it in our model cellar. And then it was just different. The bidding just was different. You just put it in like these big old bales, and you just take it. They bid on it, and you get your check, and you're gone. So.
Did the price change over the years?
Or? Yes. You got to keep in mind, in 1980, 1979, you could work a grown man back then, you know. Things were cheaper. A grown man, you know, he could work all day. It was just salary. You know, the tractor driver, like in the early 70s, might get $10 a day. What you call prime tobacco and looping it, putting it on the stick, they might get $15 a day. A guy that worked in the barn, he probably get $25 a day. Then, you know, as time got modern, you had to pay people by the hour. It increased, and it just kind of just changed all the dynamics of it. But the price of tobacco back in the 1980s, if you had good quality tobacco, which in this region here in Gaston County, our tobacco always was better than we got a better price. My dad, my granddad, if the people in Alabama was getting $1.50 a pound, we was getting $1.85. By the time they was getting $1.85, sometimes we was getting $2.25 a pound, because it was the soil that we had here, and you know, versus the red clay and Alabama and Georgia, the soil just didn't have the nutrients like we had here. So our tobacco always was quality. When my dad and my granddad come up, all the buyers was like looking for them. Mr. Brown, you know, we was known for having good quality tobacco. And tobacco, the further you get up the stalk, the better the quality of the tobacco was. So it was back then, you could make a lot of money. The labor was cheaper as opposed to as the time got here. Then the price kind of got stagnated to around, never got over $1.75 in the 2000s. Of course, everything else go up. Diesel fuel for the tractor go up. Labor is high. Chemicals is high. The run the bonds is high. You know, like, you know, things change. You used to put it in stick bonds where it ran off LP gas. Then you went to buck bonds, which is like these bonds that you see behind me. And, you know, a whole lot of things changed, so the price wasn't as good as in the big picture, but you could still make some money, you know, if you kind of cut back on this and added more to this, you know. But it was nothing every week to have a labor bill for $2,000, $3,000 every Friday, you know, because you got to pay the people. But it was good return in it. If you had a good crop of tobacco, you could do real well. And most of the things that my dad did and my granddad, they was able to prosper, but it was because of tobacco.
So do you think even if you didn't have, is the main reason why you got out of it that you didn't have the help?
The main reason I pretty much got out of it was I didn't have the help.
So you think you could still turn a profit today if you did it, if you had the help?
Well, since I've been out of the industry, I really don't know what is bringing a pound now. Yeah, but I enjoy growing it. I mean, it just was the help, really was the problem. Just couldn't just get the help like you used to.
How much did you have to be doing okay?
I grew, the last time I grew some, I had like 35 acres, right at 40 one year, 35. But I mean, per acre, you know, it just depends on your farm. You know, every farmer got his own way that he think, you know, work the magic. I mean, it's been so long now, but you know, I can't remember exactly how many thousand pounds over all that you could make an acre, but I can remember this. It was nothing to come back with a check every Thursday. I remember my dad having checks for $24,500. This Thursday, the next Thursday, it might be $30,000. I remember having checks when you first start out, you know, they low, like, because it's not the most quality of tobacco, $12,000, $14,000. But it was nothing in a season to, I'm saying, the gross over $100,000. You know, of course, you got to pay your labor. You got to pay your leg twisted. But at the end of it, there was room for, you know, to make a profit.
Wow. A lot of the folks we're talking to, most of them were farming on the side.
Mm-hmm.
Not many people were doing this and making a living out of it. That's why I'm asking you about it. You seem to be one of the few that was able to make it work.
Yes.
So what happened since then? What have you been doing since you quit?
Since stopped growing tobacco, ever since I was, my dad always grew, we always been known for growing peas, believe it or not, peas and okra. So over the years, we've developed a real solid pea business here in Gaston County. We grow all kind of peas, Cream 8s, Cream 12s, Sedanis, Zipper Cream, Cream 40s, Elite. I don't know, I probably do 12 different varieties of peas. So over the years, transitioning from tobacco, this part of the year I do peas, and in the wintertime I do greens, mustards, turnips, collards. And right now I'm in the process of actually implementing, like all my peas, most of them go to show you the dynamics of time. I remember when I was in high school, probably in 1983, 84, it's just different now. You know, I look at a boy, like I tell him sometimes, man, when I was 15, about 16, you could drive. My dad worked at Chattahoochee in the evening time. I would get his truck, load baskets of peas on them at that time and sell them for $8 a hamper. In the evening time, I'd leave out like, you know, 5:30 after we come out of the tobacco field and go around, you know, in the community, hey, you want to buy a bushel of peas? And I would sell them for $8 a bushel, which now, you know, I still have customers even from then that still come and get peas, which now most of them, where I used to sell them now, I shell 99% of them. Nobody, that was just showing you like the time, you know. There was a time like when I was growing up, when it was pea time, peas, butter beans, if your friends come over, your cousin, everybody got to get a pan, you know, you're shelling peas, which now I have a pea sheller that I can shell a bushel of peas in 5 minutes. So now through value-added processing, I just only add value to the process of shelling the peas. I got a machine, I can put 2 bushels in it, and 8 minutes, you know, the peas are ready, already shelled. So kind of built a strong business off that. I got some stores, got some people that come out here to the farm every year, you know, and I kind of built the business off that, and, you know, it really, that's how I've been sustaining. So this part of the year, that's what I do, from June to probably like October. Then from like October to January, February, I'll step into mustards, turnips, and collards.
And who are the people that you sell it to?
I have
businesses, I guess.
Okay, the Piggly Wiggly food chain treats me real good in Blountstown, which is local. Blountstown, Bristol, Piggly Wiggly right here in Quincy, Piggly Wiggly in Tallahassee. The Piggly Wiggly local chains have been real good to me. Also, Quality Meat right here in Quincy. They treat me real good. They buy most of their peas come from me. I take them to them sometime 3 times a week, just depending, sometime 4. And also, over the years, we've developed the muscadine grapes, or the scuppernongs. I have like 2.5 acres of them back there. We started out with just these 4 lines right here. And the way how we came up with this idea, everything me and my dad planted in that space back there, we tried to plant sweet potatoes, the deer would eat them up. So that property, we wasn't kind of doing nothing with it. We see, like, potential in these things. I just told my dad one day, I said, what we need to do is just go ahead and plant the whole grove. It was kind of like one of those things, if you build it, they'll come. I could just feel something about it. And when those scuffernongs get ready, I can't keep them. Every day when I pick them, I pick, like, they yield good, like 30 buckets every day, sometime every other day, just depending on how they get ripe. But it's a good business as well. So from the... Sometime they get ready from the last week in July to about the first week of September, or they're going to get ready the first week in August, all the way they last about the second week of September. And I sell those to the Piggly Wiggly stores, Quality Meats, buy a lot of them. 80% of them I sell just right here. Sometime on a Saturday, you come out here, there'll be 20 cars, you know, just in and out coming to get them. I have a you pick if you want to, but 90% of the people just say, hey, you know, because it's so hot. But my vineyard is real clean. It's just be so hot. And some people just like the tradition of, you know, taking their kids showing them something that come off of a tree, and you know, but most of the people just come right out here to the farm and get them working from the telephone to hearsay and actually social media. Over the years, I built a customer base from simply Facebook. I had one of my classmates, high school. You don't need but one. I got a buddy that's a what I call a Facebook junkie. He, you know, everybody know him. He always just promoting happy stuff. And the idea came to me one day. His father had like a vineyard. There was just a little small, regular little grapes. I said, hey, man, why don't you just come over to the farm one day and take a picture? I said, don't worry about it. It's going to go. And this been 3 years ago. So he actually works in Thomasville in the post office. But when he get off in the evening, he come. He'll sell four coolers every evening, 5 days a week, long as they in season. No, because he'll go on Facebook, tell them where I'm going to be, and everybody just come get them. So it works for me, you know. I got nothing against social media. Use the right way. It's just as powerful as TV or any radio station. Use the right way.
Yes, sir. Yes. I was going to ask you about that because, and you're the first person I've talked to yet who says they're using social media. And you're successful, so I think there's something there that's working out.
Yes, and I do the same thing. But, you know, it's just a year of tradition. Like, I have no problem selling my greens. When it's come time, I just might go on Facebook and say, hey, I'm out here in the field. I'm showing the people my greens. You know, I'm telling them. They looking at them, how good they look. I'm telling them I don't have all this stuff to them. You know, people eat greens and say, oh, my stomach was hurting. I tell them why they hurt your stomach because the great big farmers, I'm a small farmer, they got irrigation water, put a bunch of ammonia nitrate to them. Of course, they just want to get them big to put on the market. And you say, oh, boy, them greens was good, but, oh, they tore my stomach up. Hey, your body ain't built for a whole bunch of ammonia nitrate, you know? So that's kind of like the thing. I don't put a whole lot of stuff to them. I kind of really try to keep them natural as I can. And I only cook, most people come out here to the farm, but Christmas, Thanksgiving, New Year, I go to town. Just over years, I've been doing this for years, me and my dad. So Christmas, Thanksgiving, New Year, everybody looking for me on the corner of Pat Thomas and Martin Luther King, just at on that corner, been there for years. And I sell a whole truckload every day, all the way up to Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year. And also, you know, just over the years of watching things, you know, I kind of got frustrated maybe 15, 10 years ago. I said, here I am in Gaston County. I have all these greens here, and I should be able to sell them, you know? You got people here that eat, so I'm kind of now working on a program from the farm to the school, so that's really working out for me. So this year I'll be selling my products, you know, in the school system. So that'll work out real good. So the tobacco worked for my dad. You know, it's kind of like a saying. People say, well, what was good for my mama? It's good enough for me. Well, what was good for my dad wasn't good for me. My dad had to